Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, everyone. This is Mary Lurson coming to you from Sunday, the last day of the NAMM show here in Anaheim, California, with our podcast, Talking at Music Education, and our Facebook Live at EnterTalk Radio. I first want to thank our wonderful partners at EnterTalk Radio and our producers and helpers here for Talking at Music Education. We've been able to do a wonderful segments here for our podcast and with wonderful guests. And our final guest, Arabian Prince.
Yes.
So tell me first how you came by that name.
Wow. So when I was young and an up and coming DJ, like literally when there were really no DJs in LA, I was maybe 15, going on 16 years old. And I'll put this out there, you know, in the 80s, you used to either dress like Prince or Michael Jackson or, you know, some other weird thing with spikes or.
Well, you had to get noticed.
Yeah.
You were a DJ.
I was a DJ, right. so I used to dress like Prince. And
no mouse head for you.
No. maybe in the future there's something coming. We'll talk about that later. But I was called DJ Prince because I kind of dressed like Prince. And from the transition to from being a DJ into music, my first kind of messing around with songs, I was still calling myself DJ Prince. And a friend of mine, Egyptian Lover, who's another famous musical DJ pioneer guy, we always did shows together and hung out together. And we were in a roller skating rink doing a show. And a girl walked up and she goes, "What's your name?" And he goes, "Egyptian Lover." She goes, "What's your name?" I'm like, "DJ Prince." She goes, "Nah, you should be called Arabian Prince because you guys are always together." And I'm like, "Hey, that's kind of cool marketing." So
right.
I kept it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And it's stuck. And
it
works.
Stuck.
It works for
it's
you,
worked,
right?
Yeah.
So in the 80s, DJing,
yep.
Right? Is this still with vinyl or had the tables started?
No, it was all vinyls. You know, we carried around big crates of records at the time. I was doing a lot of schools, elementary schools, high schools, hooked up with a big DJ crew called Uncle Jem's Army. And we started doing the sports arena, the convention center. I mean, we would do 10,000 people at the sports arena with just DJs, like nobody performing. Right. And it was an amazing time.
I can just see it.
Oh, yeah.
The floors were
oh yeah,
100
speakers, 100
right,
speakers,
right.
Floors pulsing, like 3 inches of sweat on the floor. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And this vinyl thing was.
Oh,
you're still doing vinyl. Right?
Yeah, we're still doing vinyl now. It's digital vinyl, but it's mostly still vinyl. But it was the beginning of the art form,
and
I would
say. There a retro thing happening too?
Yes.
That there's a lot of people that are still, they want to do.
Oh, no. Yeah, right? They still want to do it. And the fact that what's crazy is now you can walk into, believe it or not, Walmart, or you walk into Whole Foods or Urban Outfitters, and they're selling vinyl again. Vinyl records and turntables. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen. Yeah,
it's coming back.
Definitely in the home goods stores, like Crate and Barrel and all those.
Yeah.
So I have a little confession to make.
Mm-hmm.
I was trained as a classical flutist.
Nice.
So coming to the concept of DJing and scratching,
right,
was like what? But I also was a avant-gardist, so I was trained as contemporary music.
Right.
So it all... But then I saw probably someone at your level doing it, and it was an instant recognition of mastery.
Huh.
You
interesting.
Know? In other words, I saw instantly that it had a deep level of mastery.
Yes, it does.
And what you're listening for, and the blending of beats, and the creating of those sequencing of beats, and the sequencing of mood, and that's what gets that whole building, people jumping five feet in the air by the second hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes this hypnotic thing. So yeah, and then seeing DJers coming, I'm not sure I'm saying it correct, DJ artists coming and playing in ensemble with other acoustic instruments.
Yes.
Oh, that just blew me away.
Oh, it's amazing.
you know? Yeah. And it was just like, I get the whole, it's really skill. It's artistry.
It's a tool. It's another musical instrument.
It's really cool.
What I tell students is, you know, my mother was a classical pianist.
All right.
And a music teacher. So that's my background.
Yay.
Yeah. She tried to teach me how to play the piano, but I wanted to play football. But I learned, you know, like you learn by being there. And that's what helped me in my timing and having very quick fingers being a DJ. So I tell the kids who all they want to do is be a DJ or a rapper or something like that. I'm like, no, you need to learn and have some type of musical background because that's what's going to make you great. If you just say, oh, I want to be a DJ and you don't know music, if you don't know timing, if you don't know these things.
And a little bit of structure. Like when do you actually make the seams of
there
the
you
thing,
go
right
yeah and you it's need to know the songs you're playing and where these things are and the keys. Like you can't just play, you know, this song with that song because they're not in the same key. Certain things you got to know and have an ear for,
or you have to slow it down enough to modulate with the mechanics of it to make it fit.
Yeah,
right? See, I listen. I'm listening
there
to what you
go.
Guys do
there you go I appreciate
and,
it
and I have a you know, that musician's ear going, wow, that's great the way that they did that. How do they do that? Like jazz, right? Yeah. How do they do that?
Oh,
what
yeah.
was a chord progression? So did you learn piano at your mother's knee? Did you take piano lessons?
Yeah,
or did
I
she
took
say,
piano lessons.
Did you play like a little Mozart and Bach inventions?
I never got that far. I was very resistant because we had a piano in the house and we had an organ in the house and I would just putz around with it, and she would make me sit down and learn
tough, right?
and read. Yeah. And I didn't want
to
do it.
But then you learned to read music.
Yeah, know? And it's so funny. And this is the only blessing I think that came out of it. I learned from her, but at the same time, I had my uncles and cousins who were all military guys coming back from, you know, overseas, bringing vinyl records of just the craziest stuff as a little kid. Like, you know, I think my first 8-track cassette tape, for those of you who don't know, there was something called 8-track cassette tapes. Okay.
Yes, I.
Yeah. yeah.
There were?
Yeah, we
and
know.
And they were really weird.
So my first.
But everybody loved
them.
Oh,
yeah. My first 8-track was, you would think it would be something like, you know, R&B or funk or something like that. No, it was Kiss. And it was the one that they had the 4 album covers. They each had their own album. And he gave me a Gene Simmons Kiss 8-track. And I listened to it every day and I could sing all the stuff and everything. And then he gave me Parliament Funkadelic and Prince. So that just ruined my mind for music. And I was just mm-hmm. all over the place. But it was a blessing to be all over the place because I didn't focus on one style of music. I wanted to do everything.
Mm-hmm. So you started in the 80s and you've been doing this ever since?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I've been making music for 37 years.
Full-time professional DJing.
DJing, making albums, you know, NWA, we've been blessed to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now.
Yeah,
so
I know.
I don't know why and how we got in, but hey, I'm not going to complain about it.
I would say innovator, right?
Yeah.
DJ innovator.
Innovator,
right?
Yeah.
Right? Endorsing a lot of products, working with a lot of manufacturers.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of which has a lot of interesting and regular gigging too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, tour and travel and perform and
Yeah.
And, you know, tech company now and trying to teach kids about being open-minded and innovation.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, anything else that you want to add in terms of just what you're doing musically now? I mean, if we just bring us up to date, the musician part.
The
and then we'll talk
part,
about the social, the musical and social consciousness things that you're working
on. Yeah, right now I'm still producing. I produce a lot of artists. I'm exploring new types of music because I DJ a lot now, more so in the EDM market space. That's where the money is right now, in the big EDM festivals and things like that. So when I go DJ some of these things, they don't tend to pay me as much as they pay the Deadmau5 and the Skrillex and the Calvin Harris's because they're new school, they're relevant. I'm considered old school, so they pay me old money. So, you know, I'm kind of doing some top secret stuff to reinvent myself, which I tell everybody, like, as you go through your musical journey or your career in general, you have to kind of move with the times and reinvent yourself. So I'm doing that same thing.
That's what artists have to do, too.
It's art.
Sorry, you
it's
know,
all art.
You know, in other words, you came in at a certain time of invention, self-invention.
Right.
And then, you know, you can't just keep painting the same picture.
No.
You know, it's like you have to. Right? It's just part of the reflection.
Yes.
Right? Reflection and introspection, and we count on artists to be those people.
And I'm
so you're doing a little bit of that now.
A little bit of that, and actually working with older artists. Like yesterday, I was here with David Sanborn's sister, and his nephew and brother-in-law to take his catalog, and he's still out touring and doing things, but to kind of expose his legacy to a whole new generation of music. Because a lot of the rappers now, the trap music and stuff like that, they're going back and using horns heavy in this new music.
Oh, I know, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. So what I'm doing is getting all the old artists.
It pops.
Yes, it pops. So I'm getting the old artists. I'm like, look, you can make a lot of money right now. Let's don't take your stuff and just do a catalog. Let's take your stuff and make stems. And put all that stuff out there so this new generation of artists can take your stuff and create new songs.
Some fun with it.
Yeah, fun with it. And you'll make royalties and you'll get licensing and everybody's happy.
Putting it all together, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Well, good for you. How many, just got to know, how many days of the year are you on the road? Are you constantly out running, doing runouts?
I'm trying to slow down a little bit. I used to do 100 or so dates a year. But now I'm slowing down because I see the new thing. You know, I want to give back a lot more, so I want to teach more. I teach a music business course once a week. I travel around and speak at a lot of universities and schools and stuff like that now. So, you know, just try to do a little more of that stuff.
Yeah, it's all about how do we pay it forward, play it forward.
Yeah,
right?
play it forward. Yes. Yeah.
So let's talk about your social activism in music.
Yes.
What is it currently and where did it grow from? What are you hoping to achieve?
Like we talked about a little while ago, my influences in music. I understand, like, growing up in Compton, I could have gone down one of many numerous paths. And my uncles were smart enough because they were all bad and they all got sent away to the military. Not bad, you know what I mean? They were doing stuff that they shouldn't have been doing. And when they came back, they made sure that I didn't do the same things that they did. So
mostly
they,
uncles, you said.
Yes,
uncles
and cousins. And they exposed me to, you know, synthesizers and early electronics back in the day. Back then, I guess the hot thing in the late 70s, early 80s, echo boxes. You know, everybody wanted to put echo and delay on stuff. Remember stereos and that whole psychedelic trip thing. So I'm a little kid playing with all this stuff. And that's what sparked me into getting into music and getting into technology. And look at where I'm at now. I want to go back and teach the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, kind of give them the tools early to open their minds so they can be more creative earlier. And I'm not against STEM or STEAM or regular curriculum, but I do believe that you also have to let them have an open mind and explore. That's how we get innovation. That's how this next generation will give us the next amazing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to let them be free to explore from time to time. Yeah.
So how is that happening beyond the teaching? It basically you're expressing where you want this to go by starting to teach now, right?
Yeah, teaching. I've traveled the country, and luckily I'm a pretty good golfer. So being a pretty good
golfer. Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, yeah. Golf opens a lot of doors for me. Mm-hmm. So by being a golfer, I get to hang out and play golf with some, you know, vice presidents and CEOs of big tech companies or big music companies. And we become friends over the years. And I never really asked for much, but, you know, when I started getting into this path, I'm like, you know what? We got to give back a little bit. So what do you want to do? I'm like, hey, let's build a technology center to let kids, women in technology, diversity groups, veterans, you know, pretty much everybody come into a place that they can explore what's out there in music and film and arts. Because my belief, and this is just me, I believe that all medium now has come together. Before, you said, oh, yeah, you're in the film business, you're in the music business. No, it's all the same now. It's media and it's all technology. There's, you know, technology in art, there's technology in fashion and beauty and music and everything. So I want to build this huge center and just allow people to come in and explore, touch, break, come up with ideas. And if we find something amazing, we'll fund it. If we don't, we'll teach, you know, like, what are you interested in? Okay, we'll fund your path into that. or if we can't do it, we'll send you to someone who can. I just want to just let
so
people explore.
You're in development phase.
Yeah, we're
this.
In development now. I have okay. a lot of big partners like Microsoft.
Well, keep us posted
yeah.
on that.
Yeah,
right?
We'll do that.
You know, at our NAMM headquarters in Carlsbad, we have a museum of making music.
Oh, really?
And there is a hands-on music making area there that is highly tech focused.
Oh, wow.
And there's 40,000 people coming through that museum every year.
There you go.
So, you know, it just never forget that there might be existing programs where you could sort of help expand.
Yes. And that's what I want to do.
And
yes.
There's the Experience Music Project in Seattle,
mm-hmm,
right near, right?
Yep.
Right. That remarkable. And I think they've dabbled in the idea.
Yeah.
Because I know you can go up into their experience labs and do scratching and DJing and do all sorts of things. So, but they need guidance from musicians.
Yes. Yeah. And then this all needs to go to the next level. You know, like I tell people, like when you walk around the NAMM floor, it's amazing. You get to see all of these amazing companies and you get to touch their gear. You may not be able to afford it. Some people can afford it. They've never seen it, but they can go and play with it on the floor and get inspired by it. And we need more of that away from the convention as well to lead people up to this. You know what I mean? So people who never thought they could be musicians can go, wow, I can do this. And now I'm a musician and now I'm at NAMM and now I'm bringing more people. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah.
So that's going back to your full circle, right? Because I admitted to you that I was a classically trained musician.
Yes.
Right? And you admitted to me that you had some really strong foundations.
Yes.
Right? So the grand question always is, as someone who, you know, I think I've done okay busting out of my traditional training.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
To embrace, I mean, I've been astounded over and over and over what is available to me as a literate musician in terms of the new learning I crave.
Right.
Right? So I had an experience not long ago of truly wanting to learn the ukulele well.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yes.
And saying, I will never take a human lesson. I will do this all online.
Okay.
And because I knew music, I had basics, I could knock myself out of a paper bag. I play ukulele so well.
There you go.
And I learned it all online.
Yeah.
Tablature, every song, every stroke, every version of that song, every riff.
Yeah.
Slow motion, long, you know, I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
So the crossover is, what is the basics that we want to have every child, every person really to sort of have?
Mm-hmm.
The question to you as an established DJ artist,
right.
What are, you know, is there a basics that we want to, like that they want them to have so that they can cross over into technology and it's a completely wide open field?
Yeah.
You said you read music.
Yes.
You didn't like the piano. Didn't like the, you had some sense of rhythm and structure.
There you go.
Is there like, well, let's make sure everybody gets that.
Yeah.
And then they go, bam, the world is their oyster.
Yeah.
When they hit.
I think that's what it is. It's teaching basic rhythm, teaching notes, like, because there are only so many notes. There are millions of combinations,
you know,
of notes.
At base, it's not difficult.
No.
It's pretty much third grade knowledge.
Yes, it is.
Right.
And, you know, something we're exploring too is, you know, I'm part of a thing with a company called Upload VR. We're starting to do some things. And with VR and augmented reality, what's going to happen is now we were talking, there's something called machine vision that's coming. It's going to be amazing. You'll have your glasses and pretty much the computer is in your glasses. You can see through and I can see and talk to you guys, but your glasses is giving you information. So as you're going throughout your day, if you want to learn the ukulele, as you're just moving out your day, you're getting information on that all day.
Or as I'm playing it.
Yes,
and
as you're playing it,
it's right there.
Right, and it's telling you when you're hitting bad notes and it's saying correct it. You know, it's all going to be so easy going into the future, but I think we have to tell people that they can do that. Like you went and did the research because you're a classically trained musician and you said, you know what? I can go online because I know and I can do this. But someone who's not can go online and learn as well. But I think a lot of people don't get the knowledge and information or don't have people like us to tell them
they
can.
Well, and I think the perception is that it's kind of an opportunity available just to a few.
Yeah, and it's
and
not.
That's our breaking down barrier stuff. That,
yes.
That's our version of social justice.
Yes.
We want it to be an opportunity that any... you know, whether they can afford the highest level products eventually or whatnot, that it, this basic knowledge field is just something that every child should have the experience with.
So, and what I tell every...
This is fun talking to a futurist
I like this.
About that.
Yeah, and I tell everybody, you know, I tell everybody, no matter how hard something is, it's easy. That's the first thing I tell a kid. Oh, that's easy. Because if you put it in their head that it's easy, even if it's hard, sometime, you know, their own inner struggle will go, well, he said it's easy. I'm going to work at this because maybe it feels a little hard, but he says it's easy. Okay, I'm going to keep doing it.
You know, the thing that I'd love to have a round table without any tapes or recordings, right? Just talking, no one could hear us.
Yeah.
Is to talk about the what we know on the neurological level.
Yeah.
About how the brain is wired for music.
Yes.
And that in some form of AI, or you start listing acronyms to me that I won't know what they mean, but some version of this futurist thinking about all this technology, that it's the potential is to match what we know from the neurological to what we're building in the external, because we pretty much know how these brain waves are working.
Yes.
Now, why can't we get a bunch of engineers together and say, well, let's just make the connection to the learning an automatic?
Yeah. I love this lady. Let's just do it.
So
let's do it.
All right. So maybe between now, we'll launch it at the next NAMM show, or you'll launch it.
And I'll bring the people in. Like, we should talk about
because,
that.
Because, you know,
and make
we
it
know
happen.
That.
No, let's just make
you know,
it happen.
The neuroscientists, and I'll tell you, the same neuroscientists know a lot about the brain.
Yes.
And it's especially around things that are causing people a lot of concern about, like concussions and things like this. And they have developed mostly through the auditory processes, which are based with music, right?
Right.
And it's the auditory processes and the ability to fine-tune the recording of that in the brain, which is leading to all this new knowledge. And a lot of times these folks are ready to take it out somewhere.
Yeah.
But the technology on the other side, and it's for me, it's all about learning, how we bridge learning.
Right.
Then we're into some revolutionary stuff.
There you go. And my thing is, let's do it now instead of later.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
it's time.
I have no idea how you are a DJ, but I like it. And my musical ear has really come to admire it as a true musical form. So wherever you are in this journey, keep pushing the envelopes. You said you're kind of reinventing again.
Yeah.
And that's what artists have to do.
They have to.
You know? And so what's your last few hours at the NAMM show going to be?
We're going to hit the floor, kind of hit the places that we missed, you know, over the last 3 days, because it's a vast floor. The new area is amazing, the new building.
Yeah.
Talk to some last people that I met in these last few days. And then I have a 4 o'clock basketball game. I play basketball too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We're like just a pickup game?
Yeah, Torrance YMCA. And actually I'm working with the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club to put little smaller versions of my lab in to kind of do that as well. So
We're all for that.
Yes.
You know, this Compton thing is very interesting. Yeah. You know, I've never been to Compton. Mm-hmm. Forgive me for not going to your home. But you produce quite a few musicians out of Compton.
Oh, yeah. Buddy Dr. Dre.
There's
DJ
something.
DJ Quick.
I mean, what's going on?
Cameron Lamar.
What's going on? On the hood there. Come on.
Hey.
I mean, we know there's some rough stuff going on.
I joke
there,
about it. Like, when you're in there, you're trying to get out.
Keb Moe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what's that about?
Yeah. You know? It's amazing stuff. You know
so
what
it's,
it is?
It's just there's a volume. There's obviously a large volume of people. There's a lot going on there.
And there's a hunger to do something amazing.
Right.
And they see those before them that are giving. And that's my thing. It's about knowledge. It's about like, hey, they did it. When I go to schools, I'm like, I tell them where I'm from. And I say, look, if I can do this, you can do this.
Right.
You know, and we have to go out there and say that, because a lot of times people don't tell people that they can do that. They don't tell the kids, like, you can go do that.
So from when you grew up, are things better in Compton?
Yeah, they're a lot better in Compton.
Well, see, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I heard Dre's going and giving back. He's donated millions of dollars. And, you know, Kendrick Lamar, and I'll be going in there and doing some things. Yeah, we're going to. And not only Compton, like,
I know.
I'm trying to do it across the country.
I know.
And we need to. We can't just alienate the cities that have a famous name or
you
something
know,
like that.
We are. This is a great way to end the NAMM show, really. We, our field of music makers is a very idealistic, generous community.
Yeah.
You know, there hasn't been one person as I've interacted again this whole week, that isn't in some form helping their community.
Yeah.
It's just part of it.
Yeah.
And because everyone really wants to build a more musical world.
Oh, yeah.
It takes the 100,000 plus people that are here to sort of carry something back.
Yeah.
And to get reinforced to go back and keep doing that.
Yeah.
Whatever form of music they make and whatever their community looks like. And
yeah, I had this idea, and this was just like, because I never try to ask for stuff from I have partners and we're partnering to do cool things, but I don't like donation. I've never been a donation guy, right? So I'm like, you know what would be cool? It's like, if every musician who put out a song gave $1, not per song, just every song that comes out, $1. You know how much money that is every year that's going back to the kids?
Right.
That's millions of dollars.
And that's, you know, we established our NAMM Foundation. If there ever there was a big idea, we're ready for it.
Yeah.
But we have to grow slowly and do it the right way too. So, well, who knew I could actually be hosting a podcast with Arabian Prince.
Hey, who knew that?
Yeah. Oh, very, very cool.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here at the NAMM Show, for being part of this episode. And thank you all for joining us here at EnterTalk Radio and the NAMM Foundation for Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. Namm. That's Mary L. N. A. M. M.